Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. It is May. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and it's a time that we can address a number of topics when it comes to mental health mental illness and, how to stay healthy, what we can do to be preventative, and what we can do to be proactive, and what we can do when we find that perhaps a loved one or even ourselves are experiencing some issues that affect our mental health. So I hope you can stick around for the conversation today. We're going to take a look at suicide prevention with our friends from Lutheran Family and Children's Services. And I hope you can join us for that conversation. Stick around. We have more throughout the month as well as we reflect on mental health during Mental Health Awareness Month. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family. You can find out more about them on our website, kfuo.org. They're in the sponsor section. You can find the CUW logo there. Joining me in studio today, Dr. Christina Kirsting, Counseling Supervisor for Lutheran Family and Children's Services of Missouri. Welcome back to Faith and Family.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you in studio today. It's been, I think it's been a year since we talked. We talked during Mental Health Awareness last year and brought along some of your coworkers and colleagues to help us address the issue. Today, we're going to focus in on some of your areas of specialization. Before we get into that, though, tell us a little bit about your work with Lutheran Family and Children's Services.
Sure. So as a counseling supervisor, I see clients myself. So I see about 15 to 18 clients a week. And then I also supervise counselors there in their clinical practice.
Wow. Well, thanks for setting aside some time for us today so we can share your work and also impart some knowledge to our listeners today. I know that your work is very important. I know your time is as well, and I know that those you serve certainly value your time. So thanks so much for coming over to the studio to spend some time with us today. Now, tell us about your areas of specialization.
Sure. So since 2003, I have also worked part-time at a youth-staffed suicide hotline called Kids Under 21. And when I started there, I was not yet working towards my PhD. And so I had found that there was a gap between suicide prevention and counseling, that those were two fields within mental health that needed to be bridged together. And so when I started my doctoral program, I decided to write all my papers on suicide and then eventually wrote my dissertation on the effects of suicide on the family system.
In your studies, what did you learn about suicide prevention that perhaps you hadn't really looked at or something you hadn't considered before, maybe as a counselor? Or what was it that in those studies that really stood out for you?
Well, there were a few things. And one of the things that I think was the scariest for me as a clinician was that suicide is scary. And it's really scary to talk about, and it's really scary to ask about.
Sure.
So there are a lot of clinicians, because of their own fears, who avoid asking those difficult questions for their clients. And then those clients leave feeling like they weren't able to discuss what's really going on for them. Mm-hmm. And so we see this vicious cycle that can occur when we avoid the stigma and topic of suicide. And I also think associated with thoughts of suicide and the experiences of that is trauma. We often overlook that, and we think that it's just something that everyone kind of experiences instead of looking at how difficult it really can be and how, the long-term effects.
So what is your proactive approach to suicide prevention? Where do we begin?
Well, this is a good place to start, having a conversation. And I think, again, it's really difficult. When I was a beginning clinician, I would simply ask people, you know, do you ever feel like you're going to hurt yourself? And that's a very different question than asking directly if they're ever having thoughts of suicide. And hurting yourself could be, like we were talking before we came in, self-injury, and which is very scary, but it's not always life-threatening. And so we need to really be willing to have that conversation about suicide specifically.
So you know, some examples of self-injury, I think probably the one that comes to mind for most of us is cutting.
Right.
That, as you said, that may not necessarily be life-threatening, but is that sometimes something that maybe is a predecessor to suicidal thoughts?
So possibly. So self-injury and suicide are definitely correlated, mm-hmm. but there's not a cause and effect.
Okay.
And so when we talk about self-injury, it's definitely a warning sign, but it doesn't mean that it's going to lead to that, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Sure. Sure. So how then do we be proactive? You said having conversations mm-hmm. with clients. You might start with, have you thought about hurting yourself? Ever had thoughts of, mm-hmm. of hurting yourself? Where do you go from there? What if they say yes?
Then you get a little nervous. but no, if they say yes, then that means a lot, because that means that they're trusting you, mm-hmm. whether you're a friend or a clinician. You know, it's important to ask those questions. I don't want to make it sound like only clinicians can ask those questions. We can ask them for people we care about and people in our lives as well. But if they say yes, if you're not a clinician, then, you know, the best thing you can do is be present with them and connect them to resources. You know, we're very fortunate in the St. Louis area. We have so many resources available for mental health. Mm-hmm. And so just being able to connect to one of those resources can be very powerful. In the clinical world, I think what's really important is to fully assess what's going on for the client. What has brought them to this point? And what can we do to make sure they're safe right now in this moment?
As a parent or a friend or a loved one, a spouse, and someone shares that they have had thoughts of hurting themselves, what's the worst thing I can do? What's the best thing I can do? What should I avoid? What should I avoid? And you said certainly staying with them and connecting them to professional help. What are things I should avoid doing in mm-hmm. that in that time, in that conversation?
Well, I think shame can be detrimental mm-hmm. to their mental health. Something like, I can't believe you would ever do that. That's so selfish. Or throwing your own opinions onto them mm-hmm. when they're in a vulnerable state, that can do more damage than good. I also think a lot of times we look at suicide as, what do they say? So they say it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that's not always the case, because if my parents are divorced, they're never going to get back together. Chances are, right? And so that's a permanent problem. In my mind, when we minimize that experience of my parents getting divorced, we're only showing that I'm weak and I can't figure out how to deal with it. Same with, you know, trauma or my boyfriend broke up with me. If we say things like, it's not the end of the world, this too shall pass, we think that we're helping them find comfort, but we're not. We're dismissing mm-hmm. what they're really experiencing.
So having this conversation without passing judgment.
Correct.
Just being present, just listening, mm-hmm. and staying calm while we offer help to connect them to professional support, professional help.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's hard to stay calm when someone...
It is.
When someone says, yes, I've thought of, you know, or has opened up in some way to indicate that they've thought of hurting themselves, they've had suicidal thoughts. Any tips on how to help me or others stay calm in
sure.
that situation?
Sure, like how to manage your own anxiety.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, well, and, you know, I will tell you, one of the hardest things is to be comfortable with the word suicide. Because it's so scary, and be comfortable when someone's putting themselves in a vulnerable state. We live in a society where mm-hmm. you shouldn't be vulnerable, right? Pull yourself up by your bootstraps and yeah. don't cry in public and things like that. And so being comfortable with that vulnerability is a great place to start. Recognizing that someone is trusting you and being able to be present with them beyond, oh my gosh, what's my next step? Being able to actually hear what they're saying instead of thinking of what you can say next.
So that takes time.
Definitely.
Yeah. I'm one of those, you know, always trying to think of what is my next move? What do I do? Trying to be proactive. A Boy Scout, you know, always trying to be prepared. And that means thinking ahead. But rather, what you're saying is just take your time in the moment. Just listen.
Right.
Not pass judgment. Not freak out. Mm-hmm. Do what you can to stay calm. And as you're listening and thinking, I don't have to be uncomfortable with this word. There's no reason that I have to be uncomfortable with the word suicide.
Right. And, you know, one of the most powerful things you can do is remember that they are safe if they are with you.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take 3 hours to sit there with them and process and just sit in silence. That's okay, because you're showing them that you're not going to bail mm-hmm. on them. You know, so even if it takes you 10 minutes to be quiet and just look at them and sit next to them, that's okay. You don't have to have the perfect thing to say. You don't have to reach out to them in a way that's going to be mind-blowing, mm-hmm. right? You don't have to have some profound statement. You can just be there.
Be there. Be patient. Listen.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So now we've talked about, you know, what happens if we have that conversation. Then we're trying to connect them to professional support.
Mm-hmm.
How do we do that? How do we find professional support where we live? I know here in Missouri, you mentioned we have in St. Louis, we have a lot of helpful resources around the country. I'm sure there are resources in each major city as well.
Sure. Sure. So we're really lucky because we also have the Keeping Kids First grant in St. Louis County and St. Charles County, and then we also have some in Franklin County. And so through those grants, we're able to provide free counseling mm-hmm. for youth under the age of 20. And I feel like that's something that not everyone is aware of, because when we think of mental health, we think, oh, it's going to be so expensive. We can't afford to pay for the counseling sessions. We have to meet our co-pays. We have to meet our deductible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not necessarily the case if you live in one of those areas. And, you know, there are websites available. The Children's Service Fund has a website in St. Louis County that can list all the providers and what kind of services they do provide for mental health. And I also think, you know, we've discussed, we are very fortunate to have 3 different hotlines here in St. Louis. We have Kids Under 21, which is a youth staff hotline. We have Life Crisis Services, and we have BHR. And so those are all here and available for anyone who needs them. And we also have this new thing in St. Louis and St. Charles where they can text to get help.
Wow.
Right. And so that can be really powerful for a lot of teens and young adults who are nervous about using phones. Mm-hmm. People forget that phones are used to actually talk to someone, right? they're used to texting or emailing. And so I think that's a great way for people to seek services, too.
How do we find these resources online?
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot online. I know that if you go to KUTO.org or BHR, I think theirs is BHR.org. If you Google BHR or Life Crisis /Provident,
mm-hmm.
They all have those on their website. And I believe we have those resources available on our website too, LFCSMO.org.
Mm-hmm. All right, LFCSMO.org. That's the website for Lutheran Family and Children's Services of Missouri. Lots of helpful resources on there as well. So what about prevention? What are other things, other areas we need to consider when it comes to suicide prevention?
Sure. So I think one of the big pieces, we need to know what warning signs are and even what symptoms are for things like depression and anxiety. I feel like we are a society that reacts when something happens. We don't normally step out and do what we can to prevent that from happening. And so when we have a student or we have a loved one who's in a quote-unquote funk,
mm-hmm.
we just kind of dismiss it and be like, oh, they'll be okay, instead of really trying to find out what's going on and what we can do to help them. Again, having that conversation, not being afraid of where it may lead. I also think one of the big things that we need to do is, and, you know, as a clinician, I kind of push counseling a little bit, but we don't go to counseling until things have gotten bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to go to counseling just to maintain. You don't have to, you know, especially with couples, I'm going to say this, and parents, they'll say, well, yeah, we've been having issues for a couple of years now, but we decided to come in and finally find out how we can help Joey, you know, in school. Okay, well, so I love that you're here now, but what stopped you from coming when it was like 3 months or 2 months? And, you know, what could we have done then?
Mm-hmm.
And we don't think like that in our society.
Well, I think we've attached a stigma to that, just as we have to any other mental health issue, which is why we're addressing them here on Faith and Family this month. And we cover them throughout the year as well, but Mental Health Awareness Month is certainly a good time to address these issues as well. That's what we want to do. We want to be able to address these issues so that to reduce that stigma that's not necessary, that's not helpful. We want people to be able to get help. We want families, we want parents, kids to get the help that they need. So we just got to set aside that stigma.
Right. I agree. And you know, we need to be a little kinder to ourselves too. And remember that it's really hard to be a person, period. You know, it's really hard to make it through the day sometimes. And it's really hard to go home to a chaotic household full of kids or to a significant other who may have had a bad day too. You know, it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to find support from others. We don't have to do it alone. And I think that's really important.
Every vocation we are in, every station in life we are in, has its challenges, has its difficulties, and how we cope with those difficulties, how we cope with those challenges. Well, God has given us the resources to manage and cope with those.
Right.
Whether it's through clinical help or the other people around us.
Right. Right. And I think that that's why a family system is so important too. You know, we need to go back to our family and how important it is to talk to each other and be there for each other, you know, and then have your family support you and getting that additional help if you need it. I think that we're so afraid to disappoint that we're not being honest, and it's okay. They're going to love us anyway.
Absolutely. Earlier you mentioned a peer staff or a youth staffed hotline.
Yes.
Tell me more about this. Why a youth staffed hotline?
So Kids Under 21 was created because there was a young man who had died by suicide, and he didn't feel like he had anyone his age to talk to. And so his mother created this agency to try and help other teens in supporting each other. And so what happens is there are teens that are ages 16 to 21, since they're under 21 according to the name in the agency. And what happens is they go through a 40-hour training, and then they observe and they get consultation so they get to practice on the hotline. And then they're able to answer the hotline themselves. And there's always an adult there with them to provide guidance if needed. But it can be very powerful for a teenager to be able to call and say, I'm having these problems. You know, can you help me work through these? I mean, I know I'm young and hip and all of that, but it's been a long time since I've been a teenager. And it's very different now than it was when I was a teenager. And so I think that it can be great for someone to understand what it's like for Snapchat to blow up with pictures of this person and, you know, how do they recover from that? Whereas I don't necessarily know what that's like.
Yeah, I haven't used Snapchat, so I wouldn't even know when they start using some of the terms,
right,
what they mean. And for them, this might be a very crushing issue because it affects them socially with how they interact with others.
Right.
Because someone did something very cruel or embarrassing or bullying using this social media that I know nothing about.
Right. And I remember being in high school that, you know, people had to wait till seventh hour when something happened in first hour to know everything that happened. Now they know instantly. Everybody's texting or putting it on social media and there are no secrets. And that's really scary.
That's you bring up a really good point that just the way that technology has affected and shaped our society and how we interact with one another, that I'm sure plays a big role in mental health for us.
Definitely. You know, and that is also one of the scariest things when it comes to suicide prevention as well, because unfortunately, you can Google how to do a lot of things now, and that can be dangerous. And things like Facebook, they've actually created a way to report if someone is posting about suicide so that you can let someone know so that they can get assistance. So I don't want to rip on social media completely. They are trying to make efforts for prevention and to support mental health. But it's still a very scary place. And you don't know what people can find. I mean, anybody who's ever accidentally mistyped when they're trying to Google something sees, whoa, that's not what I meant. You know, you know, one of my favorite quotes, and I think this applies to the internet too, is by Augustine Burroughs. And he says, think of your mind like a bad neighborhood. Never go there alone. And I think that that's a really good advice, that you shouldn't be up in your head too much, and you also shouldn't be on the internet too much.
Sure. Surfing and searching for things, yeah, alone like that, in those... those areas that take us into dark places. Well, a good example, even in preparation for today's program, just searching for suicide prevention, I was surprised how many sites specifically use technology on my computer to identify my location.
Mm-hmm.
Just searching for suicide prevention.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, when Siri first came about, I remember I was sitting in Kids Under 21, and I asked... Siri, I said, I'm having thoughts of suicide, just to see what would happen. And Siri at the time was not able to find a suicide prevention agency or resource for me. That has changed now, which is great. But it's interesting, you know, we keep evolving. So hopefully we'll continue to see more prevention.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be scary for a time if you're not able to get those resources when you need them through the means you're used to receiving them.
Sure. Yeah, I haven't, as much as I work with technology, I'm not very good at using it for those everyday things like, you know, finding, the simple stuff. I still haven't mastered Siri. I haven't figured that one out yet. But it is amazing how technology can both be a help and a hindrance to some of these things when it comes to mental health. What do we know what leads up to suicide? Is there a common factor in what leads up to suicide among many? Or is that a wrong question to ask?
No, that's okay. No, you know, majority of the time, I would say we see things like depression, mental illness, and it could be situational or it could be chronic. You know, there is a difference. It could be that all of a sudden everything in your life is kind of going wrong, or it could be that you do need medication, you do need therapy on a regular basis to be able to combat those thoughts. We also see, and I don't know if you were aware when you were looking things up, but we are in the midst of the time of year when the suicide rates are the highest.
Really?
April and May are the 2 months out of the year where the most suicides occur.
I wonder why. I always thought it was during, you know, the winter, around the holidays.
People do think that. You know, I have a lot of theories. I always say that if I was ever to get another PhD, that I would do my dissertation on this topic. but yeah, I think something with the spring, with the renewal, with the energy that's presented, if you've been depressed and everyone around you is happy and positive and all these things are changing, it may reinforce that hopelessness that things aren't going to get better. And we also see... April is the time of year, the 1 month, where we've seen the most violent crimes, too, if you really think about it, right? Waco, Texas, Oklahoma City bombing, Virginia Tech shootings, Columbine shootings, all those things happened in April. And so I don't know if there's...
It's the time change.
Maybe.
Oh, wait, it's in March now.
And not everyone has those time
changes. True.
But, you know, it's a theory. It's okay.
Yeah, it's not a very good one.
But it's a theory. So, yeah, I'm not sure exactly what the correlation is there, but we do see, and even in schools, if you've ever worked in school, if you remember being in a school, the energy that's around is pretty intense.
You know, if we're talking about, you know, schools, whether it's grade schools, high schools, even colleges and universities, this is a time when, here in the United States, when a term is coming to an end, for many this means... going on to a different chapter of life, you know, whether it's graduating or changing schools the next year, summer's coming up, you're going to be away from your friends, or going home. For some kids, a home may be a place they don't want to be for the summer, or living with a, you know, a different parent or a different family member during the summer rather than who they live with during the school year. All those potential changes, big changes that can come up as the school year ends.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that we recognized back when I did work in a school was that so many kids who were on free or reduced lunch, they loved school because that meant they got to eat. So when they are mm-hmm. being released from school and they're going home for the summer, they don't know when their next meal is going to be. They don't know if they're going to receive the consistency with their needs that they received while they were in school. And that's a scary place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you think about the different aspects of home life and, you know, what does that mean for you as survival? Yeah, that can be terrifying.
Hmm. Well, all kinds of potential reasons, things that could be connected to that increase in suicide during April and May. But we're talking about what we can do to be proactive in preventing mm-hmm. suicide. So you mentioned when I asked, you know, is there a common cause, something that happens or that leads up to suicide? And most commonly is depression,
yes.
It sounds like. Whether that's, as you said, situational or chronic.
Mm-hmm.
How do we address that? How do we address that, you know, that situational depression? I think you mentioned this, you know, anxiety when all these things pile up on you at one time and you just seem overwhelmed by the burdens of the world.
Right. And I think those are actually the more dangerous types of depression in my mind, because those are the ones that we think we can just push through and we'll be okay. Where if we're depressed for a long period of time, we kind of acknowledge, yeah, something's wrong and I should probably, it's like if our knee is hurting for 6 months, we go, yeah, I might need to go to the doctor, get that checked out, right? It's the same type of thing. The situational though, oh, I'm okay, I'll just push through, you know, maybe I'll talk to the school counselor or maybe I'll talk to a coworker and see what we can do. And I think those are the times when it's up to our loved ones or those people in our lives who see us on a regular basis to recognize, hey, you know, I care about you and something's mm-hmm. off here. What can we do to help? And I think that offering help and offering specific things like, you know, I know that you're really overwhelmed with taking your three kids to dance and then to school and then to soccer practice. Can I maybe take one of them? I want to spend some time with them anyway. You know, offering instead of waiting for them to ask, because that's probably not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
People often aren't going to say, you know, I'm feeling really overwhelmed. Can you make dinner tonight? That just doesn't really happen.
We're a little more free about that in our household.
Oh, well, that's good. That's a positive, see?
That's right.
That's a protective factor. You're doing
exactly.
Well.
We are talking about suicide prevention with Dr. Christina Kirsting from Lutheran Family and Children's Services of Missouri. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back from that break, we'll continue our conversation. You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Mequon, Wisconsin, overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration in action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
You're listening to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates, talking with Dr. Christina Kirsting, a counseling supervisor at Lutheran Family and Children's Services today. If we would have had a longer break, I think I could have gotten in a full session of counseling while we were on our break there. That's great. It's always fun to have professional clinicians on because you're such great listeners.
Well, thank you.
Get to talk about all kinds of things. Get to talk about myself, you know, during the breaks. No, it's fun to do that, but also very helpful to have professionals like yourself on, because I learn so much, and I think our listeners are learning so much as well, especially during Mental Health Awareness Month. We've been talking about suicide prevention from a number of perspectives. You know, we've talked about that how youth or peers can be helpful, especially the peers that are trained help at the hotline, mm-hmm. that youth staffed hotline. That's a great way. But even fellow students, you know, even classmates at school, as they can be helpful in suicide prevention. And I know that there are some schools that and programs that help train and equip peers, students to be resourceful and to be helpful. Yeah. In suicide prevention. Let's talk about families, what we can do at home when it comes to being proactive.
Sure. And as I mentioned a little bit on the break, so attachment is one of the biggest protective factors against suicide. And so what it means to be attached is that you can understand what your child is experiencing and they understand that you understand. And so one of the big things, you know, you may have seen the videos from back, I don't know the years, but it was a long time ago, when a mom would be looking at her baby, and when the baby would laugh, the mom would laugh, and they would model mm-hmm. what the others is feeling. And then when the baby would cry, the mom would just be blank-faced and not show anything. And the baby would, of course, not be able to soothe themselves because the mom was not showing that she understood what they were experiencing. Mm-hmm. And that carries on throughout our life, right? When we are having a fight with our parents, you know, I can remember even as a teenager fighting with my parents, running to my room, and I remember being able to count to five and my mom walking through that door checking on me. And that is huge. That's attachment right there, right? Because it is the attachment figure's job to repair the damage done to that relationship. And I think a lot of times parents get caught up in their own frustration and they want the child to come to them. And that is something that doesn't foster that empowerment piece that we need. It's something that shows you're on your own. As parents, as attachment figures, we need to make sure that we're checking in with them. And that's not easy to do. I understand that. But that is something that will help prevent mental illness and suicide in the future.
Well, that's something that my wife is very good at.
Good.
Very good at that. You know, when there's a, you know, a tantrum or something like that with a, you know, with our toddler. Mm-hmm. And he has to go do some time out in the chair, mm-hmm. but she's very good at that follow up right away. I usually need some time to cool down before that, before we get back to checking in and seeing how he's doing. Mm-hmm. But I understand what you're saying, though, that relationship between parent and child is really key in just our mental health and well-being.
Exactly. And it's also, you know, the security that you feel within that relationship. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm, you know, 12 years old and I feel safe with my parents and I feel like they are going to be there for me no matter what because I've experienced that secure attachment growing up, I'm going to be able to tell them when I'm having that situational depression or that things are going wrong in my life and I need some support. If I don't have that security, I'm less likely to share that information with them, and I'm more likely to try and deal with it on my own, which we know can lead to problems.
Right. Try to find it somewhere else.
Right. Right.
Try to find the resource or help somewhere else.
Right. Right.
That's which exactly isn't always help.
Right. And, you know, I will be honest, that's one of my biggest fears for so many of the adolescents that I work with. I see that they don't have that secure relationship with their parents, and I see them trying to find it in other relationships with their peers and inappropriate relationships with their peers just because they want someone to be there for them for whatever reason. Mm. And that's scary. I want them to be in a safe, secure relationship mm-hmm. rather than trying to find that love in all these other places.
That's interesting. Just the human nature itself, how mm-hmm. how we try to fill that need, that void in ways that are dangerous and not helpful.
Right, right. And it even goes back, and not to get to you know, school and academic on you, but John Bowlby, right? He, I don't know if you're familiar, he did the monkey study. Mm-hmm. You ever heard of it? Where he put these baby monkeys in two separate rooms, right? And one set of the monkeys had a like fur covered mom figure, But that figure did not support food or anything. It was just something to have that physical comfort. Then they had like these wire mama monkeys that did provide food. They found that they wanted the physical comfort, right? They wanted that attachment. They wanted to be touched. They wanted that mother figure that we often associate with newborns and things like that. And so that's how important attachment can be and feeling connected to someone else. It's more than just getting your physical needs met. There's an emotional need that needs to be met as well.
And that's just with monkeys. Imagine what it's like for humans.
Right.
I mean, even more so that we seek that attachment, that we need that in our relationships. So attachment is really very helpful, is key in being proactive and preventative. What about talking about the words? You know, what about, at what age do we even address the topic or speak about suicide? When do we talk about it? When do we not talk about it with kids, with teens?
It's a good question. So I think one of the things that needs to be done first is, even with your two-year-old, start talking about feelings, right? Show me your sad face. Show me your happy face. Show me your scared face. You know, modeling what emotions look like and how to regulate them.
So far, all we have is a silly face.
Well, that's
We've
a good
been
face.
Trying. All we have is a silly face right now.
That's a good face. That's okay. But that's one of the things. They'll start to recognize that, especially if you're showing pictures or things and saying, well, you know, this is sad or this is happy. And they're going to be able to feel attuned to others and be able to recognize that in others. And that's really one of the things that they need to start recognizing in themselves too, right? As they become more familiar with that, they're going to have a clear understanding of their own experiences being impacted by feelings and emotions. Then I would say, honestly, I don't have an exact age for
sure.
You, but I definitely think middle school is not too early to start talking about suicide.
Well, especially if it happens if it happens in the family, in the community, in the school, or in your congregation, somewhere, you know, in one of your circles, it comes up. You know, how do you talk about it around and with your children? I think that's. I know for me, you know, in middle school, we had a couple of. There were, I think. Between sixth grade and eighth grade, I think we had probably two or three suicides during those 3 years.
Wow. That's scary. And that was, no offense, a long time ago.
It was a very long time ago. No offense taken.
And so now, you know, we didn't experience a lot of stress when we were kids. We thought we did. But these kids today, they're experiencing a lot more.
Well, it seems things move so quickly with, as we were talking about earlier, with technology and the just the accessibility of information and so much information that they receive and have to filter through in a day. I can imagine. Yeah, it's very overwhelming.
Exactly. And you know, as we're talking about children, I don't know if we talked about this last time or not, but suicide in the media is so powerful too, and. I don't know, the movie The Incredibles even has a suicide attempt in it. I don't know if you remember that or if you've seen it.
It's been a while since I've seen that movie.
So a guy tries to kill himself by jumping off a building. Mr. Incredible flies in and saves him, and he sues Mr. Incredible, and that's why Mr. Incredible has to stop being a superhero, because he saved his life. And so we're exposing very young children to suicide through cartoons and other forms of media. Even... I forget what that movie's called. The Bee Movie, maybe? Where I think Jerry Seinfeld is the bee, maybe? But he says him and this girl are buddies, and they make a suicide pact that if something bad happens, that he'll sting her because she's allergic to bees, so they'll both die.
Wow.
And that's also an animated film.
Right. There are so many films that are for children, supposedly, but so many things that are in them that we need to be aware of as parents and... If our children are going to watch them, we need to be ready to talk about them as well.
Exactly. And I think avoiding it isn't going to help. We need to be able to say, well, do you know what that means when they say that in that movie? And kind of process it with the children.
Yeah, take time to work through that. you know, what if it happens? What if there's a suicide in the family, a relative, and you're going to visitation or funeral and trying to prepare yourself, and you have a young child, not even in middle school, younger than that. Every family situation is different. Every right. child is different right. too, and how they handle that, how they process that,
right.
To prepare them for, if they are going to the funeral, or, if you're going to have a sitter stay with them while you go to that funeral. I'm sure that's up to each family, but.
Right. Well, and I think one of the big things is, can you imagine what it would be like if your favorite aunt or your father even died when you were, let's say, in third grade, and then one day you find out when you're 22 years old that it was a suicide, the betrayal that you would feel.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think in general, it's good to be honest and to try and process that. I have had clients in my office when we do a genogram, which is basically like a family tree mm-hmm. with them, they know that their great-great-grandpa died by suicide, and they're talking about suicide in my office. And so even if they have not been directly impacted, like they did not know that person, right, they know that that existed, and it's difficult to process. And so that is a big part of being honest and helping them work through that when it's happening, rather than one day waking up and realizing, oh my gosh, this happened in my family. This explains why I'm feeling this way. And now I'm having these thoughts too.
Hmm. So honesty is important in a family. Just figuring out how to approach that. What's appropriate? What's age appropriate?
Right.
to discuss that as a family, and that's where working with a professional can be very important, very helpful.
Right, and I think that's another thing to remember when it comes to counseling, especially at Lutheran Family, we see this on a regular basis that just because you come to counseling doesn't mean you're in counseling for life. You can come to counseling for a few sessions to help work through whatever may be going on in that moment,
mm-hmm.
talking about a difficult situation with your child or with your significant other, and then you can leave. You don't have mm-hmm. to come back. And then, I just had this just the other day, a client that I haven't seen since 2014 called and said, yeah, I think it's time. I think I need to come back. Something's going on. Okay, I'm here for you. Let's do that. Let's get you back in. It doesn't have to be as difficult as we sometimes make it in our minds.
This isn't a cell phone plan where you're locking us into a two-year
There's
agreement.
There's no contract.
Not locking us into an agreement for the rest of our lives.
Exactly.
Not signing up for a TV plan or something.
Right.
Either, right.
Right.
Well, that's helpful to know that, when working with a legitimate professional, that it's really intended to be helpful to us for that time and can be helpful for us in the future, but it's up to us
right.
whether or not we want to continue that care, that receiving that support. It's not that you're committed to going to counseling for the rest of your life if
right.
you go in, and it doesn't have to carry with it some crazy stigma either.
Right. And when we talk about counseling, it's so funny. I think the language too, people say counselor, or people say therapist, or people say patient or client,
mm-hmm.
It's all about what you want it to be. I have lots of clients who just say, I have a doctor's appointment, and they don't say what mm-hmm. kind of doctor's appointment. They don't say, because with that, there's no stigma. People are like, oh yeah, good. Go get your, physical therapy, or go get your occupational therapy, or go get your speech therapy. But we don't ever really encourage the mental health therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just as important.
Absolutely. What we've talked about parents, we've talked about peers. What do you see at schools? What are schools doing in terms of suicide prevention and mental health, well-being in general?
Sure. And I think that's, again, one of the things that we're really lucky to have those grants here in St. Louis County and St. Charles and Franklin County, because we are able, Lutheran Family, but also other agencies, to provide additional mental health support in schools. We're able to be there in the schools, see the kids at school. So, it can be really difficult for parents who have three jobs to get their kid to counseling in mm-hmm. the evening or whenever. And so we're meeting them where they are. I think schools are also grateful, because now the school counselors in the schools can focus on more prevention because they don't have to constantly address the child screaming in their office. They do when that happens, mm-hmm. of course, but they have support for people to come in and help with those children sure. who are in their office a lot, right? And so we're seeing that prevention and intervention are teaming up together in the schools. And we're also seeing postvention, that if there is a suicide or something tragic happening in the schools, we are coming together as a community and going out and addressing mm-hmm. that so that they're not just left dealing with it on their own.
And I have seen this. You know, I think I mentioned off the air that my son attends St. Mark's Daycare, you know, St. Mark's Lutheran School in Eureka. And very grateful for that because a counselor has been placed there as well. And just what you were talking about earlier, that, you know, sometimes it's challenging for parents to try to schedule an appointment, get them there. It's, you know, just like the other bazillion things that families with young kids are doing or right. with, you know, middle school kids are doing, trying to get to a bunch of appointments, whether it's soccer or other, you know, after school activities. Having the counselor right there at the school
right.
has been, I know, very helpful to many families.
Right.
When something comes up during the school day as well. Right. You know, the school is able to make use of that counselor as a resource.
Yeah, and it is. It's really great because so many of my clients have so many things going on every day. You know, they have youth group on Wednesdays. They have this mm-hmm. on Thursday. They have dance. They have, and so when they're able to get that support outside of my office, it makes me feel better mm-hmm. about the fact that I'm not able to see them on a regular basis. They're still getting that. And we all work together. I don't want to speak for everyone, but my experience with other agencies and people who are in schools addressing these issues, they're more than happy to collaborate and make sure we're all on the same page when assisting these individuals. It's not one of those situations where, no, this is my client, you can't help. Again, we're so lucky in St. Louis to have so many resources and so many that are willing to be there together and come together as a community.
And there are, you know, around the country, there are organizations and agencies. We're very grateful to have the resources we have here in St. Louis. But I know that there are similar agencies around the country
yeah.
that provide similar services. And a lot of Lutheran agencies around the country that do this as well. Very grateful for them. And get to talk with them from time to time here on Faith and Family as well. So we talked about schools, talked about parents. Other places where mental health is important? Schools, parents, peers, anything else?
Everywhere.
Mental health is important everywhere.
We
talked yesterday with a pastor about mental health in the congregation as well. An important place to address that as well.
Yeah, and I do. I think that's one place where it is starting to become... I think they're starting to address it a little more too, at least in the youth groups. Because mm-hmm. when I've talked to my clients about, you know, what is youth group? Because it's been a really long time. I don't know. And they tell me that, yeah, they like have different aspects of the group where it's not just, I always thought it was just kind of social hour for the youth. And I guess it kind of is, but there's more adults now and they're checking in. And then mm-hmm. there's older adolescents who are there and checking in. And that's a good thing, knowing that there's someone else you can talk to, whether it just be your soccer coach or whether it be your pastor or your youth group leader or even another parent, someone else's parent that you can communicate with at a safe place like church is really important.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate the intergenerational approach to things like that you were just talking about, that older adolescents, older youth, as well as other parents who are involved, because that helps bridge the gap. So that if mm-hmm. we learn how to talk with and interact with someone who's not our age, we're less isolated when we face those problems in the future.
Right. No, yeah. I agree.
Well, let's point our listeners to some resources. Of course, Lutheran Family and Children's Services of Missouri, LFCSMO.org, right. is the website. You can find a number of, a wealth of resources on there, including the counseling information. There's a counseling tab right at the top of the page. Find information about that on there. The phone number I see here, 1-866-326-LFCS. Is that a good number to
sure.
to contact Lutheran
sure.
Family and Children's Services of Missouri, and they can get you connected with what you need. Any other resources you want to point us to today?
Just like I said before, KUTO.org or Googling Provident or BHR, because those are the
St. Louis ones.
Right, the mm-hmm. websites. And the National Suicide Prevention Hotline number is 1-800-273-TALK.
You've got it memorized. I had it on paper here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I'm glad you have it memorized. That's important. That's important. 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255 is the National Suicide Prevention Hotline. Very important piece to have. Something to keep on the fridge or even store it in your phone.
Yeah.
You know, you never know when you might encounter someone in who needs that help. To have it stored in your phone is really, I think, a smart thing to do.
I agree.
Well, it has been a pleasure talking with you again. Thanks so much for coming over, spending some time with us. I know that you probably have plenty of work to get back to at the office and the folks to visit with today as well. Dr. Christina Kirsting, Counseling Supervisor, Lutheran Family and Children's Services. Thanks so much for being my guest today.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word. Hope you can stick around for that. I believe Pastor Asbury is filling in today for Pastor Whedon. I hope you can stick around as they study God's Word. I think they're looking at Hosea. You're listening to Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.